All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 77 in this American History program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. Today we're going to continue with the story of the Industrial Revolution. But before we get into that, as promised, I'm going to show you my prediction of what the world would look like today if the Civil War had not happened, complete with explanations. So here is my dramatic representation of what I think the world would be like. And as you will see, it is dramatically, gigantically, hugely different. So that's why I think the Civil War is so important, not just to America. So let's go ahead. I'll share my screen with you. And this is my map of the world today without the Civil War. So if you look at this map, obviously, there are only 8 major groups of nations in the entire world, empires and so on, alliances, and well, one of them is the CSA. So, in other words, my point, my prediction is, if you insert the CSA into the picture of the entire world changes. That is my claim. And so what do I mean by that? And why do I think the world looks like this, which is a very scary, frightening, and awful world to live in, quite frankly? Why do I think it looks like this? In essence, what changes? What would be different about our world if the Civil War had not happened, if slavery had not been eradicated in the CSA, if this other competing country had arisen in the Americas, what would happen? Well, I don't think the world would have become an America-centric world. In essence. In essence, I think the world would still be a European or Euro-centric world. It still would be to this day. And as a result, it would look in a certain way. The world would still be working according to a set of rules, a set of behaviors, a set of cultural values that was dominant in Europe, rather than American values. And the consequences are catastrophic for the world. So, number one, America would not have gotten involved in World War I, and as a result, it really only got involved in World War II because it got involved in World War I. So those, to me, go together. So what are the results of America not getting involved? Because America doesn't exist anymore, right? There's a Northern American country, and there's a CSA, a USA and a CSA, but they're not the same. And the USA can't get involved in World War I if the CSA is there. Because, well, there's a bunch of reasons. One is Woodrow Wilson was a Southerner. He's the one who brought America into the World War. Well, another reason is because America's military power developed enormously in the Civil War. It would not have happened had the war not happened. And most importantly, because America would be stuck in a new balance of power problem with the CSA. And fighting in Europe would be a terrible idea in that context, because there'd be a whole new situation. How do we protect this border? How do we live in a world in which we're up here free, they're down here with slavery? Right? This becomes now the critical problem of the entire nation of the United States, how to deal with neighbors. That we don't want to fight in a war, but we also don't want them to attack us or take away our territories and so on. So that becomes the critical problem. America does not join World War I. Because of that, it doesn't join World War II. And the consequences of that are, number one, Japan is successful. Because Japan, without the United States involved in World War II, Japan would have been successful. So, you now get the Japanese Empire. No reason to suspect it would go anywhere. So if you get the formation of the Japanese Empire, and you get the formation of the German Empire, along with its African possessions. So these are two empires that exist in the world that never came to be because the United States stopped them from existing. If the United States is not there to stop them from existing, they come into existence. And if they come into existence, well, of course, then everything else changes too. France and England have to now concentrate their entire existence on stopping these great powers from destroying them. So France and England become, that becomes their sole purpose in life, to resist the growth of the German Empire. And if that's their sole purpose, they're able to do it. They don't have to rely on the United States to do that, but it requires every effort that they have. And so the British and the French empires remain. They keep their empires because they need them. And they even reach out to the United States and connect with America and make an alliance, because that's the one that makes the most sense. And so you have this red part of the world that's the British Empire, but it's now an Anglo-American empire of sorts, all connected up, in order to stop the green one and the brown one, because these are really dangerous. They've got to be stopped over here. 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 So now neither of these sides is powerful enough to stop the other, but basically they end up in this unstable situation called a balance of power. And of course, the United States does not stop. There is no Cold War because there's no United States to stop the Soviet Union in the Cold War. So it's still there as well. And everybody else is just trying to get along. This part is pretty fanciful. You know, Spain and Portugal and their colonies kind of joining back up again in order to survive. Maybe Italy survives as an ally of Germany. And I suspect the CSA would conquer northern Mexico in order to have more land. So this is the world that comes from not having a civil war. Obviously, one possible version, and who knows what happens, because when you have a balance of power, the most certain thing of all is that it's not balanced and it won't stay, and you'll just have catastrophic wars, because basically you're dealing with, as I say, what is the essence of all this? It would be a European world. America would not be the kind of country that could go out into the world and say, we are going to police you because you guys aren't good enough. Your European civilization is rotten, and we are going to teach you how to be civilized. We're going to make the world safe for democracy. We're going to go out and clean everything up, because that's what America did. Now, imagine if America had not done that. Then the world would not have gotten cleaned up, period. There's nobody else capable or willing to do it. So the world would still be the disgusting, messy European situation that led to World War I and World War II. It would just be on a much bigger scale, which I think is really, really scary. So to me, when I think of the Civil War, I think of the world that would have happened without it, and I am just, I'm just scared out of my wits. I do not want to live in this world. So, and of course, I don't want to live in a world that has slavery. So, I mean, that's the start. And that's why it's so morally important that the United States fought the Civil War. But just on a practical level, in terms of the outcomes and the arrangement of the balance of power, it was absolutely crucial for the United States to become the most important country in the world, because without that, we'd be living in this. And this is awful. I would not want to live in this world. A world that still has slavery, a world that still has massive empires, including some of the worst that it would have ever seen, German, Soviet, Russian, and Japanese empires, That is a really, really scary thought. Wow, thank goodness for the Civil War. That's my theme. Thank goodness for the Civil War. All right, so questions or comments? I don't know if this has any reality to you or it's just way over your heads. But for me, it was fun anyway. It was, and not just fun, I mean, really serious in a sense that I took it seriously. I tried my best to imagine what the world would look like. Keen?
Well, I just have a comment. To know enough about the world to be able to do what you did with this map is basically my goal with learning history. Like, if I can do that, I'll feel like I've been successful in life because I can think of no more important thing than being able to do this. How, like, if the whole world could make this map, we'd have a near, practically perfect society, at least, in many senses. It wouldn't be perfect, of course, but if everyone was able to do this, the world would be such an incredible place.
I completely agree with you, Keen. I completely agree with you that if people could have these thoughts, they would live differently, right? Because most people live in a world that goes from Starbucks to Walmart to whatever, what's that little enclave that people live inside of their world? And then, that vacation that they take for 2 weeks, and that's where people live. And they do, vote and do other things like that in connection in a loose sort of way to their society. But most people do not, cannot grasp the world. It's too complicated for them. And unfortunately, historians have utterly failed to make this, the case for us being able to do this, and that it's a worthy endeavor, and that we should think this way. So we're really, in a sense, we are lucky that the Civil War happened, because people did not think this way, but they knew enough. They knew enough, and in a sense, what we need mostly is for people to act by understanding right and wrong. So at least they knew enough to do this. Destroy the CSA or, reincorporate into America, and the outcome was unbelievably positive. And we can do the same thing for, World War II, for instance, is another good example, or the Cold War is another good example. What if these things had not happened? And yeah, that's a very important thing to think about and to take seriously, because it can be understood. You want to follow up on that?
Yeah, I think this map is so present-centric that even with people who have almost no understanding of history, it would really strike a nerve with them. So I think if you were in sort of promoting history to our house and taking it, or Powell history even, and taking it, or trying to bring it to more people, this map, I think that almost everybody would be able to connect with this. And if you wrote a piece about it or spoke about it, like I can see you, and I've said this before, but I can see you at a college somewhere with this map up, and everybody is just stunned. They cannot believe what they're seeing, but it's so true, and it strikes such a chord with them. You can
Well,
do a lot with this.
that's a really interesting thought, Keen. I like that thought. And I think I'd like to make maps like this for World War I, for World War II, for the Cold War. Just do it again, over and over again, and see what does the world look like if that doesn't happen, if that doesn't happen, if that doesn't happen, and just compare them and see. I think that's a very interesting thing. Somebody made a movie called America, Imagine a World Without Her. I didn't see it, but I really should. And I do imagine, when I think about the world and where it's going, one outcome is that Americans decide they don't want to police the world anymore. I think that this is an outcome, and that's possible. And in a way, Barack Obama is a president that does stand for that in certain regards. So it's interesting to see if America's going to go in that direction. And Rand Paul apparently wants to be president now. He's the kind of guy that stands for that as well, in a different way. So it seems to be something that a lot of Americans are interested in as an idea, that they want to stop policing the world. And if that became a dominant idea in American culture, then we would end up in a very interesting situation. What would the world start to look like as America withdrew and withdrew and withdrew? And I think it would be an enormous mess. So we live in what historians call the Pax Americana, which means the American-driven peace. There's a lot more peace in the world because of America. It's easy to see what wars are out there, but it's not so easy to see what wars are not happening because there's an America keeping a lid on everything. And so it would be, kind of scary to think about what the world would look like if and when that happened. So, but it's, these are the kinds of thoughts that I like to have because it's about the whole world. And we live in that kind of a thing. I mean, we live in a globalized world. So now we need to understand how these things all connect with each other, which makes our job that much harder. It used to be possible to study American history, and all you had to do was kind of learn American history. But now you can't get away with that anymore. Now you've got to be an expert in the whole world because it's all interconnected, which is a tough job. It's pretty shocking prospect to imagine a world like this. So anyway, that was fun and interesting and food for thought and everything. Now we got to go back to the Industrial Revolution, and before we get into the today's increment or segment of it, we now have two revolutions that we can use in our minds to help us understand the concept of a revolution. Right? So if you want to explain to somebody what a revolution is, and you say to them, well, a revolution is a fast, historically important change. You now have two ways that you can explain that to people. One of them is the American Revolution. The other is the clothing or textile revolution. So let's just briefly remind ourselves of each of these here. And today we're going to add a third. And tomorrow we're going to add a fourth. So hopefully, the more that you kind of understand these particular examples, the more comfortable you'll be with the idea of what a revolution is in general. And then if you study the French Revolution, and then you study the Russian Revolution, and you study the what's called the Scientific Revolution, or there's other ones out there that people talk about, you can look at those and say, okay, how does this fit my definition? Does it or does it not? Is it a real revolution or not? Or so on. Because sometimes people make stuff up or historians name things in a certain way and it doesn't necessarily make sense. Some things are revolutions and some things aren't. So, you know, this is something worth thinking about. And having as a tool that you can use to organize the events that you encounter in the past and in the world around you. For instance, like one interesting thing would be, is there a revolution going on right now in any sense in the world? Or is there one coming? And if so, what would it be like? I think there are. There's at least one coming. And maybe two that I can see that will be revolutions. And they're both industrial. Probably three or four, actually. Because we still have a world with revolutions coming. So it'll be interesting to see. I think that we will have a robotic revolution. Not that the robots will take over like in science fiction movies, but that robots will become a part of the world in a really, really proliferated way all over in every regard. Not just those little robots that vacuum people's carpets, but all kinds of robots, making pretty much everything. I think we'll have a space revolution at some point. We still haven't had it. By that I mean, we'll develop the means to travel in space. It'll be a revolutionary change. Somebody, some genius, will come up with a way for us to move really quickly through space. Whether or not it's a warp drive like in Star Trek or something like that, that'll be the best. But if it's just, there was an article in, I don't know if it was on CNN or whatever recently, about an invention. There's a Houston company that's making an engine, or that has a design for an engine, that would allow us to get to Mars in a month. I think that if we could get to Mars in a month, it becomes real at that point that we start to live on Mars, right? It becomes easier to get to Mars than it was for the pilgrims to get to America. I mean, think about that, right? It becomes easier to get to Mars than it was for the pilgrims to get to Plymouth. So at that point, we start to have people living on Mars. Right? And then, you know, our civilization is not even on one planet anymore. It becomes a multi-planetary civilization. Talk about a revolution in terms of who we are and what we can do and where we go from there. That sounds like a revolution. That's an exciting one. I think another revolution is going to be in terms of biotechnology and what we can do to repair the human body. And there are people that believe that we've already reached enough of a technological level to be able to extend life almost indefinitely. So you guys, at your age and with your health, and assuming you're not eating too much junk food, by the time you get to the point where you guys are going to get old, you might not get old. Think about that. You might not. I mean, you might be the last generation that where it's commonplace to die at around 100 or something like that. Or maybe you might live for longer than that. You might all be 200-year-old human beings. That's a revolution. You're young enough. I don't know if I'll make it. I try to take care of myself, but we have things now that are just absolutely staggering in terms of what they can. Technology that we are developing, we can repair the human body in new ways that are just phenomenal. And pretty soon people will be able to grow new organs and new limbs and just everything. I think there's no limit to that. If we don't impose a limit, it'll just be amazing. That's another revolution that's coming. And what else was I thinking of? So, I mean, my gosh. That's enough, isn't it? That sounds pretty awesome. I don't know. Will flying cars be a revolution? Eh, probably. It'll be a new transportation revolution when we finally have flying cars. We won't have to just be on the highway and have traffic jams anymore. We'll be able to pretty much go anywhere, anytime. That'll be pretty cool. Assuming we get there as well. Anyway, so just thinking in terms of revolutions is pretty cool. I like to think that we'll also have an educational revolution because we need one. Public education, government education is really spectacularly bad, and it's getting worse. And so we're going to need one. And homeschooling, I think, is a part of it, which is pretty cool. If you guys realize that, that's kind of a neat thing in your personal life. You are participating in something which is genuinely revolutionary. A whole changing of the model of education from giant factories reproducing copies of human beings that all regurgitate the same multiple choice tests. And now we have this highly individualized, localized, customized, home-based education. That will allow you to be the separate human being that you can and ought to be. That's wonderful. I hope that continues. I'm very glad to be a part of it. That's kind of a revolutionary thought too. So revolutions are pretty amazing. Usually they're good things, not always, not always, but it's interesting to have a revolutionary perspective. And to be aware and to think about that, and it can be very inspiring. To me, it's very inspiring. And so today we'll look at now a second example of a rapid, historically significant change. And it doesn't look like much at first, but here it is. Hopefully the animation is it's probably a little bit slow, but I wanted it to be slow, right? So that you could see. This is a really cool website. It's called animatedengines.com. Very cool. And I like it. It's a nicely done diagram that shows steam flowing through a valve into a chamber that moves a piston, a rod that's attached to a wheel, and that causes that wheel to turn. And back and forth and back and forth. And so you get this pushing back and forth motion that produces locomotion, that produces motion over, there's a definition for locomotion, over terrain or, right, over, by virtue of the wheel, right? The wheel is the crucial element here. So, along with the revolution in machinery for making clothing, the spinning jenny and the power loom and all those devices, if you could connect up those devices to, now remember, let's go for a second back to this. Where do I want to take you? If we go back to this image here from yesterday, you got a wheel here, right? So, and what's this lady doing? She's moving that wheel mechanically, personally, right? With her own muscle power. Well, what if you take the steam engine and you connect it to that wheel? Now you're not limited by how much strength one person has, let alone one animal, right? Now a machine is moving all of that equipment. And we go back here, and we were watching it because this was a weaving factory, right? And all of these pieces of equipment are all in line, right? Why is that? Because in the floor, there are axles turning that are attached to huge machines, and we got things connected to these particular devices, and they're all moving these things mechanically, right? So these women are not moving these machines by their muscle strength. These machines are all being moved by the power of the steam engine. Now, the other thing that we can do, if we're going to turn a wheel, is this is called the Clermont, a vessel from 1807. And, well, the other thing you can do is you put the wheel on the side of a ship, you connect paddles to it, and you've got a paddle wheeler, right? A paddle wheel, a method of propulsion for a ship that is not reliant on the wind. This is kind of a pretty one. I like this. It's from a painting, it must be, of a ship called the Savannah. And so you've got the wind power, right? But then, what happens when the wind dies? In pre-industrial times, if the wind dies, the ship is stuck. It moves nowhere. So it's no wonder it takes a month or 2 months to get across the Atlantic. Because the wind isn't always favorable. The wind isn't always blowing. You sometimes mariners like Columbus learned how to use the wind patterns on the earth to their advantage, but it was still not a sure thing. And sometimes you'd be stuck in the middle of nowhere, going nowhere. But now you've got a ship that can use the wind and that's got an engine inside of it that will turn the paddle wheel. So now you've got double power, or you've got power even if you don't have wind, which is pretty awesome. So now your transportation starts to become, you're freed from the limitations of nature here. And then finally, if you can take the same concept of a wheel that's being driven by a piston that's going back and forth because there's a chamber full of steam, you got this engine, well, now you've got a steam locomotive. And this one here is called the Rocket. I like that name. So evidently there were rockets before there were rockets. We call rockets spaceships, or, you know, at least missiles and that sort of thing. But back in 1827, I think this was, or 1833, actually, you've got the Rocket was the name of this locomotive. And it was called the Rocket because before this invention, before the steam train, it took about 60 hours, 6-0, 60 hours to get from Liverpool to London. So, you know, pretty much from one end of the smallish country of England to the other, Liverpool to London, 60 hours. With this railroad construction and with the Rocket, you could do it in 10. That's what they called a rocket back then. So anyway, doesn't sound all that amazing, right? But basically, you could move 6 times faster by this method. Right? And nowadays, I haven't checked recently, but I haven't been to England, so I don't know what this fastest train is from Liverpool to London, but I bet you could do it in an hour and a half or 2 hours. So that would mean another 5 times faster. So now, probably today, we're used to moving about 30 times faster than was possible by train through England. Americans don't bother too much with trains. Now we've got planes. So now we can go even faster. In a country the size of the United States, planes are an even better bet. But anyway, we're talking about this same kind of leap as we were talking about last time, right? With the combination of this spinning jenny, the power loom, the steam engine, all of a sudden you got human beings that can make hundreds of times more clothing than before. Cloth, at least. Then you got to get a tailor, right, to make the clothes. So most people that are manual laborers, they're not making the thread or the cloth anymore. Now they start to go into making clothing. They got to do a different job. But anyway, you got all the cloth you could possibly want. And then maybe you can develop industrial methods of making clothing. If you can do that, then you're at where we're at now, right? Which is you go to Walmart and you can easily get a t-shirt for $10 and probably made in China or something like that, right? In a huge factory. And so this is a similar leap forward, but it's a leap forward in transportation. Now, why does this matter? Why would a leap forward in transportation be revolutionary for human life? I think the best way to think of it is to think of the connections between transportation and the other values that we need. So remember yesterday, we were talking about the cardinal values that human beings need. Cardinal values being food, water, clothing, shelter, medicine. Now, if you want to understand how important is this transportation revolution, the best way to do that in my mind is connect transportation to those other values. See the connection between those, and you can understand why this matters. So is that the question for you then is that connection alive in your minds? The connection between transportation and the other critical values in your life. So pick one where you can see the connection. Tell us about it. Pick one. Food, clothing, water, shelter, medicine. What is the connection of any one of those to transportation? Okay, Juliet, get us started.
Well, you could transport food much more quickly using a locomotive than you could by horse and wagon, for example.
Okay, so you can transport it more quickly, or in some cases you can transport it at all, right? I mean, if you live in a colder climate, and Keene had snow probably for 6 months this year, right? So if you lived up there, how much food is there going to be to support a city, basically, let alone an entire state or a population of 20 million people? Can you support a population like that of 20 million people in the snow?
No.
No, you can't, because all your gardens are frozen over. There's only so many deer in the forest. You can't. The only way you can have cities, period, is with transportation, because the food has to get there. So, you know, if you're in a warmer climate, like where I am, you got most of what you need year-round. So I work at a market on the weekends, and so at the market you can buy pretty much any kind of meat and poultry and dairy product, and you can buy pretty much any kind of fruit or vegetable, and they're all produced locally. So that means that if you wanted to live where I am, you could probably manage, but it still needs transportation, because all the farmers are only getting to the market using their trucks, right? And so you still need transportation even if it's local, but you have a better chance. But if you're living in a city, especially in the north, there's no way that city even exists without transportation, and there's no way you're getting your food without transportation. So that's a good example. Connection between food and transportation is a really, really important one. Priya, what about you? What's your thought?
What about clothes and building supplies to build houses, like hammers and nails and wood and outfits and everything?
Okay, so you got two different ones there, and I'm going to go with the second one. So, yeah, I mean, so building supplies, right? The house that you're living in, concrete foundation, wooden walls, wooden doors, windows, steel framing, all the furniture and all that stuff. How on earth did it get there? And all the, as you put it, Bria, the nails and everything else, that every single item that was used to put that together. How did it get there? It was not on the site. So transportation is necessary to any form of construction. Other than your log cabin in the deep woods, I mean, even then you got to walk there with an axe. Otherwise, there's no way you're making a cabin. But, you know, so, yeah, in our modern life, none of what we consider to be shelter worthy of human beings can exist without transportation. And then, as Bria was saying, clothing, well, the shirt I'm wearing was made in China. So how does it get on my back? The only way it gets here is if there's a boat to carry all that stuff. And the cotton probably went to China from India or Egypt. And so, I mean, the what's required to make the boat to deliver all that over here is staggering. Okay, so we don't have too many left. Keen, we've got water and medicine. Which one do you want to pick?
Medicine. You can get medicine. You can get more medicine to more people faster, or you can get those people to the medicine, which would be the hospitals. So I think you can connect everything just by virtue of getting more of it to more places faster. Just pick any of them and say you can get more of it and you can get it faster.
Or no, it's not
to more places.
Yeah, I would even take issue with just saying more. How do you get any of it? I mean, how do you get any of it if you're in your house right now and you injure yourself? To the point where you've fallen and you can't get up, you know, break a leg or whatever, or you fall off the roof and I don't know what, right? You get in a car accident. At that point, there is no medicine without transportation, right? I mean, it's not just a matter of more, unless the person you were in the car with was a doctor or what, right? But it's not even just a matter of more. It's like you can't even get any. Medicine and, or, you know, professional medical help is not available like the air that we breathe, right? We have to go to it or it has to come to us. So we can't have it. I mean, just the simplest concrete example would be an ambulance. That's going to take you to medicine, to transport you to medicine. Now, as far as water is concerned, of course, we have bottled water, but we mostly think of water as coming through the tap. Well, that's just kind of a variation on transportation, right? Because the water is being transported by a mechanism of pipes and pumps. And so that's transportation. It's a different kind, but, or transmission if you prefer, but that's just kind of nitpicking. It's a form of transportation. We don't get water without being able to transport it. And civilization requires that. The Roman Empire had aqueducts feeding the city of Rome. When the barbarians ruined it all, the Dark Ages set in. They didn't have the infrastructure to support civilization. You can only do so much with well water. It's too limiting. So you have to be able to transport water or you can't have a civilization. That's pretty amazing to think of it all. It's all connected to transportation. So the positive values are really enormous. If you learn how to transport really well, then, you know, you are transporting goods in a whole new way. That's fantastic. And so just a second here. I want to show you guys one last thing. In terms of transportation, I wanted to do world's biggest container ship. Did I show you guys this before? Look at these things. If you want to think about what it takes to sustain globalized civilization, check this out. Without these things, our world does not exist. Right? So, look at this guy. Oh, that one, that's too small. I want to see the big versions of these pictures. Search tools, size, large. It's a large ship. It should be a large photograph. All right. So, which one's the most interesting, impressive picture? I don't know. This is a pretty cool one. Right? Because look, here's the tugboat and here's the container ship. That's not the biggest one. They're making bigger ones nowadays. Where are they? So obviously you got super tankers, which are gigantic and contain, I think this is what that is. Super tanker is like, oh my gosh, how many football fields long? Oh yeah, this is the latest one here. This gigantic ship. China is the one that's building the biggest ones now. Container ships. And, you know, they move all of the goods that we need, all those t-shirts from China. Now, how do they get to us? We need ships in order to do that. And these are gigantic vessels. Absolutely gigantic. Yeah, so here's a Maersk. This is one of those. That's one of the lines. So anyway, our globalized civilization doesn't exist without transportation. Those computers, the cars that are made in Japan and Germany, the computers that are made in Japan and so on, right? They don't get here without transportation. So in major cities like Long Beach and Houston and stuff like that, look at these ships lining up, giant ships lining up one after the other in the port, super tankers bringing the fuel. And this is what it takes to connect everybody together and make civilization work. Transportation. Doesn't happen. We don't have the life that we have, period. All the stuff that we require just doesn't get to us. Our life becomes way, way different, much, much more reduced in scope and capacity if we don't have it. So that's the stunning thought. And of course, what we're going to start to look at tomorrow is, what are the consequences of that? Not all of them are positive. What are the consequences of us being more connected to each other by transportation? All right, so if I take you back briefly, did I lose my preview of, yeah. Oh, not that. That's the timeline. I think I lost my map. Oh, that's a shame. Oh, no. My map is here. Right? I mean, this is a world connected by transportation. Right? Otherwise, you don't get global empires. You don't get global empires without transportation. Otherwise, how do the British, you know, the British Navy has got to get its soldiers to Africa. It's got to get its soldiers to India and so on, right? You can't get globalization without transportation, but you can't get global empires without it either. So transportation is not necessarily right? A good thing. It depends how people use it. It depends who's connected to whom. And in what ways. So I'm going to leave you with that thought. Because if transportation includes greater political connection between peoples, is that a good thing? If transportation involves greater political connection between peoples, is that a good thing? The answer is pretty hard. It's not a pleasant answer either. It's a very challenging answer. All right, we'll look at that tomorrow. That's all we have time for. So, thanks everybody. We'll pick things up with the next revolution tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.